WBEZ is supported by RRF Foundation for Aging. Let's talk about ageism awareness. Did you know one of the many forms of ageism is internalized ageism? In fact, negative self-perceptions of aging decreases quality of life and can shorten our lifespan by more than 7 years. Let's recognize and call out ageism whenever and wherever it shows up. Check out rrf.org/news to learn more. That's rrf.org/news.
America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just the cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to tonight's guided meditation to help calm the mind.
Sit down or lie down. Start by doing nothing.
Detach from feelings of anxiety or stress as you drift deeper and deeper to sleep.
Wait, don't fall asleep on me. It's Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Today on the show, more than half of American adults aren't sleeping well. And it's not just about feeling cranky or unfocused. Long-term sleep deprivation is tied to serious health issues. Now, that conversation in just a moment. And stick around a little longer so that you'll hear an update on the local news stories that you need to know today. But first, Reset senior producer Sienna Greaves is with me. She produced this segment, and she can kind of help me peel the curtain back just a bit. Hey, Sienna.
Hey, Sasha. How you doing?
Doing well.
Are you? Are you doing well?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good.
A few revelations in this segment.
A few revelations.
3 hours of sleep a night? That's insane,
yeah,
Sasha.
Yeah, okay. So I got to explain where your sarcasm is coming from for our listeners.
This is concern. This is deep, genuine concern.
Well, the reason you're concerned is because, let's take it back. I originally pitched this idea of talking about the lack of sleep that I'm getting. And then I started scrolling through articles and I saw that, okay, this is a problem happening elsewhere. Like this, we're all kind of suffering from insomnia in some way, shape, or form. And I thought, why not just have a conversation about this on the show? Surely we can get together some experts that can maybe give me some tips.
Expert, singular. We had Dr. Sabra Abbott, who is a neurologist at Northwestern Medicine. The plan was also to have a psychologist from a sleep center here in Chicago. I called, I sent text, I emailed. I could not book a single psychologist to talk about the psychology of sleep or the CBT, which is like cognitive behavioral therapies that are used to treat sleep disorders.
Are you aware of why that was happening? Why were they all booked?
Well, Dr. Abbott told us they're booked because Chicago can't sleep.
Oh, boy.
Since 2020, there has been a massive spike in people booking appointments to treat sleep disorders. And there's a lot keeping us up at night.
Yeah, well, Dr. Abbott gave some great tips. One that I'm going to take with me for sure is maybe I need to cool it just a little bit on the napping. Yeah.
I love a nap, though, Sasha.
Yeah, me too.
I love a nap.
But I think I was relying on it too much.
For me, it's screen time. I'm bad with the scrolling before I go to bed, scrolling in bed. It's a lot of horizontal scrolling in my house, which makes sleeping a little difficult.
I can just picture that. All right, we'll leave it there. Let's get to the conversation because there's so much meat there. Thanks, Sienna.
Thank you so much, Sasha.
At the table, Dr. Sabra Abbott, neurologist at Northwestern University in the Center for Circadian and Sleep Medicine. This is impacting many, many people. But in my case, I think I typically fall asleep. I've got it down to a science now. I typically fall asleep right around 10:30. Not for lack of trying to fall asleep earlier. And like clockwork, I get up at 2. Mm-hmm. And then again at 3:19, very specific. And then I'll finally open my eyes again at about 4:12. Mm-hmm. And then that's it. We're done.
Yeah.
So at what point do you think I should be worried about having too many of those in a row?
So I think the first thing to think about is how do you feel during the day?
If okay, I think I'm good getting through this stretch, right? We're on live radio right now at 9 in the morning, and I'm surprisingly fine. And my senior producer, Meha, is reminding me that I do this without coffee, Dr.
Ooh,
Abbott.
Impressive.
I am not a coffee drinker. And so I'm doing this without coffee. I'm fine. I feel fine. But by the time Say More is over at 11, I'm starting to crash. You know, I'm up just enough to listen to Mary and Pat, and then I'm like, okay, let's find a quiet room so that we can nap, maybe.
Yeah. So the first thing when we're trying to define somebody as having a bad night of sleep, the first thing to think about is it actually impacting how you're functioning during the day, or are you just somebody who's a little bit of a lighter sleeper? Is your sleep a little more fragmented? Not that we're talking about personal advice, but you did say something right up front that kind of caught my ear, which is not without lack of trying.
Oh, I try. I try. I get in that bed at 9 and I'm like, all right, here we go.
And that is the first thing that can start to lead people to having insomnia, because the more you turn it into a job and work at trying to sleep better, the harder it's going to be.
Oh, so I'm trying too hard.
Yes.
So, okay, so what do I do then? I just stay up and keep the TV on and just like let it naturally happen? Is that what you're saying?
So one of the first strategies that we have when we're trying to help people sleep better is to really focus on the bed and the bedroom as being a place for sleep only. So you really want to figure out how many hours of sleep you're actually getting, and you don't even spend any time in the bedroom outside of that window of time.
Ah, okay.
Because the more time that you spend in bed working on sleep, trying to make it happen, the less likely it's going to happen. So you have to create a window and an opportunity. But if it's not going to happen, get out of the bedroom.
And so take us back a little bit and tell us more about some of the causes of bad sleep. Why does that happen anyway?
Yeah, so there's a lot of easy stuff up front. And so typically people, by the time they come into my office, they're like, I've tried all the sleep hygiene stuff. And so what they mean by that is they're trying to stay off their phone before bedtime. They're trying to avoid caffeine late in the daytime. They're, you know, trying to do the things that you read on the internet.
Alcohol.
Yeah, no alcohol before bedtime. Kind of the usual stuff. Nothing really invigorating and stimulating. Don't start thinking about vaccines and crime and all the other stuff you're talking about right now, right before bed. But once you get past that point, typically what we find is sort of everybody who suffers from difficulty sleeping, typically there's some sort of biological predisposition. So maybe other people in your family tend to have more trouble with sleep than the average person.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a thing.
And then on top of that, you may have a bad night of sleep here or there. So it kind of starts the whole process. And then you start thinking, well, last night was bad. I felt crummy in the afternoon. Now tonight is probably going to be worse. And so then you start, even before you're getting into bed, you start thinking about the fact that you're going to have a bad night's sleep. So you already have that anticipation that things are going to go bad. You prepare and you start doing things like spending more time in bed, trying to make sleep happen when it's not going to.
Man, are you watching me throughout the day? Because you are describing my life, Dr. Abbott.
Yes. So, you know, you're not unique in this. There are a lot of people that have these same problems. And so it's just sort of a process that then kind of perpetuates itself over time.
I see. And walk us through some of the types of sleep disorders.
Yeah, so aside from insomnia, there are lots of other things that can also disrupt your sleep. Probably the next most common thing is sleep apnea. And I think especially as a woman, it's really important to keep in mind, we don't always present with sleep apnea in the same way.
So, I forgot to mention, I do have sleep apnea.
Okay.
Mild.
Okay.
Does that affect anything I already told you?
A little bit. So oftentimes for women, the symptom of insomnia may actually be a sign that you have sleep apnea. So if you hadn't already been tested for it and hadn't already looked for it, sometimes it's those apneas, those times where you stop breathing, that wake you up and then your brain turns on and keeps going. And so I think that's probably the second most common thing to keep an eye out for. And another thing to keep in mind, as women, as we're getting older, with hormonal changes, your risk for sleep apnea changes, your risk for insomnia changes. So all of those things can play into it as well.
Let's talk about fixing this, Dr. Abbott. I know that cognitive behavioral therapy can be an alternative to medicine for sleep disorders. How does that work exactly?
Yeah. So basically, the idea behind cognitive behavioral therapy, we just talked about all of those factors that are going into your mind already as you're trying to get into the bedroom and attempting to sleep.
Right.
Cognitive behavioral therapy is using behavioral strategies and cognitive restructuring to change all of those associations that you have. You can think about it as, you know, subconsciously you may have conditioned your brain to think of the bedroom as a place where you struggle with sleep, you can't sleep. And so we already talked about a few of the strategies of really limiting that window of time that you're even in the bedroom and allowing yourself to sleep.
Right.
Not staying in the bedroom if you can't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other strategies. So if you start to go on that mental loop of, oh, I'm not going to sleep well tonight, tomorrow's going to be horrible, I'm not going to be able to do my job, strategies that you can implement to try to improve that. So that's cognitive behavioral therapy is a large toolbox of various things that you mm-hmm. can implement.
So when someone comes to see you, what are some of the what's some of the advice that you give? Obviously, you sort of walk through the various scenarios and get to know them better as far mm-hmm. as their patterns and their habits. But what do you find yourself kind of going to a lot with folks?
Yeah, so definitely cognitive behavioral therapy. It's the American Academy of Sleep Medicine recommends it as first line. But sort of outside of that, like you said, I really do try to get to know my patients, figure out not just what's going on at night. So much of fixing sleep at night is fixing the daytime. So whether it's that you're doing a lot of stressful activity right up until bedtime, whether you're spending your entire day in a dark, windowless office, whether you're getting physical activity or not, all of these things can also play into sleeping well. So kind of figuring out what factors we can improve on to make your sleep better.
Yeah. And how many of these folks coming to you are still sort of feeling the remnants of the pandemic or just what's happening right now, right? I can't even really lean on just pandemic talk anymore because there's just so much happening and so many things happening in this country that are just not in favor of your neighbors and you and your family. And so are people just stressed out about just the facts of life right now in the U.S.?
Absolutely. We saw a huge boom in insomnia right around the time of the pandemic because it was just, you know, an upheaval to everything that you were doing in your life, a lot of stressors. I know we were supposed to have a psychologist joining us today, and I think
we could not get a psychologist.
They are not free right now. Our psychologist and social worker are both booked out 6 months to a year right now because
oh, goodness.
It is so hard to get in to see somebody. But you're right. We've just had kind of one hit after another of things that keep you up at night, and the news cycle is 24/7. So if you just happen to get that news alert here or there, there's another thing that sort of turns your brain on and makes mm-hmm. it hard to fall asleep again.
Absolutely. And so much time for a lot of people is spent at home because of, you know, working from home, right? So there's a lot of increased screen time and just I wonder how much that has impacted sleep as well.
So certainly screen time does play some role. So we do know that light exposure before bedtime can suppress your production of a hormone called melatonin. So this is something we naturally produce that helps put us in a state that's more permissive for sleep. So that bright light exposure right before bedtime can be problematic.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other problem with a lot of people working from home and being at home is that you may not be outdoors as much. And we do know that light exposure, so getting out, getting sunshine, getting that bright light exposure, does actually help limit the impacts of bright light right before bed.
Oh.
So if you get more bright light during the day, you're less likely to be impacted by a little bit of light right before bedtime.
So there's good to taking walks, taking breaks.
Absolutely.
And taking walks, right? And you take your lunch break outside.
Absolutely.
For instance. You mentioned melatonin. What about the folks who, you know, take that as a way to sort of get right to sleep? Sometimes it works for me, sometimes it doesn't. So I've kind of cooled off of using that. But is that something you prescribe? Or?
I would say your experience is pretty consistent with the data. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
No consistency.
It's not a great, what we call hypnotic, so a sleep aid. It works really well in very specific circumstances. So for example, if you have jet lag, it does help to reset your internal clock. So taking melatonin around those times can help with resetting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a subset of patients who are actually, their main issue is timing. So they're extreme night owls. Their natural rhythm doesn't put them to sleep till 3, 4, or 5 in the morning.
Mm.
And we can use melatonin as a time signal to help move that clock earlier.
And as I said earlier, Dr. Abbott, I mean, this is not just because it's like, oh, I'm going to be tired
for the rest of the next day. Getting bad sleep can also be really bad for your health, right? It's not just about your productivity when you go to work the next day. What are some of the things that could happen if this persists?
Yeah, so a lot of these studies are association studies at this point. And so whether or not we have direct causality is a little hard to say. But
okay.
We do know, I think one of the largest studies to look at this was the Nurses Health Study. And so this was following nurses over several years and polling them on lots of different questions about their health, including their sleep hours, and then looking at whether they developed various conditions. And so we do know that short sleep is associated with risk for weight gain, heart disease, et cetera, all of these things that we don't necessarily want to have long term.
I'm also thinking of the folks who have non-traditional work hours. So maybe
Absolutely.
Their sleep clock is like, you know, 4 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Yeah.
How does this work out for them?
And it's even worse if you add the shift work component to it.
Yes.
And so every single one of those things that I listed is definitely there if you're a shift worker. And add to that, we know that shift work is a probable carcinogen. So it may actually lead to increased risk for cancer.
Goodness. I mentioned napping earlier. What do you think of napping? Does it throw off your clock a little bit or is it effective? It works for me. I do the power naps in the afternoon and I'm back.
Yeah.
And I don't need a lot of time, just an hour.
And I would maybe even make it shorter than that. Mm. So typically, if you're somebody who kind of needs a little bit of sleep just to get through the rest of the day, 30 minutes or shorter is probably something to target.
Okay.
But I also would, if you are actually requiring that nap every single afternoon, I would revisit what's going on with your sleep at night and see
All
if
right.
maybe it's a sign that you're maybe not getting enough or good quality sleep at night.
All right, Doc. All right. So I'm out of time, but I need a magic number if there is one. How much sleep do adults need?
This is the question I hate because there really there really isn't a magic number. And I think if you fixate on that perfect.
Give me a number.
If you fixate on it, that can make your sleep worse. Now, the National Sleep Foundation did release some guidelines. So most adults probably need 7 to 8 hours.
Okay.
But it's a little variable.
7 to 8 hours. You heard it here first from Dr. Sabra Abbott, who's a neurologist at Northwestern University in the Center for Circadian and Sleep Medicine. Thank you so much. Such great tips.
Thanks for having me.
We'll put them to use tonight. Catch you up on the big stories of the day. We checked in with WBEZ news anchor Claire Lane, WBEZ reporter Chip Mitchell, and Chicago Sun-Times federal courts reporter and assistant editor John Seidel. We started with the news that President Trump plans to deploy 100 federal troops to the Chicago area. Here's Claire with what we knew at the time of this recording.
So what we know is that the Department of Homeland Security requested troops, and what they're saying is to protect federal immigration agents here in Chicago. So the request came through to the Illinois National Guard. Governor J.B. Pritzker gave the heads up on this during a press conference yesterday. It's unclear at this point where these troops would come from.
Mm-hmm.
Pritzker said, quote, none of what Trump is doing is making Illinois any safer. And he and Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson continue to condemn their presence here and this request, insisting again that military troops are not needed in this state or in this city.
Also unclear what they mean when they say that the troops are coming here to protect ICE. Any guesses at the table as to why ICE would need protection?
Well, I mean, I think the Justice Department has been building up this narrative for the last few weeks about ICE agents being in danger. They made a lot of some loaded firearms that were found outside the ICE facility in Broadview. I'm sure we'll talk about that later. But I think they've been kind of building up to this.
Yeah. So you've been following litigation, John, over National Guard deployments around the country. Give us the latest.
Yeah, the latest is that Oregon has entered the chat. Now that President Trump is deploying troops there to Portland, they sued in federal court out west. And there's actually, it looks like we have oral arguments on a temporary restraining order on Friday. So that's what we're watching for, in addition to anything that may happen here, depending on our own deployment.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised to hear that latest development? Because I know Oregon was definitely pushing back, just like we were.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, not really. Look, it's been like a month and a half of will he, won't he, right? And so it kind of made you wonder. But again, I think they've been building up to this. In California, they argued that the troops were sent in to protect federal agents, to protect ICE, to protect federal property.
Yeah.
They pointed to protests and some violence at the protests. And yeah, I've been watching to see if we get anything like that. We had a volatile situation in Broadview over the weekend, so I'm not That's horribly right. surprised that they're doing this now.
Yeah, and you know, as this is all happening, Chip, as we're seeing more ICE and Border Patrol arrests all across this region, you've been doing lots of reporting, not just on that, but on rapid response networks and how they're responding to this. So first of all, before we get any further, tell us what a rapid response network is.
Well, there are several of them now in the Chicago area. Some of them are quite formal, and they have, you know, call-in lines, and they dispatch people to go to scenes where there is ICE enforcement activity going on. I got a chance to spend a day with a West Suburban Rapid Response Network. They call it the People's Patrol, mm-hmm. and they say about 180 volunteers that in their just go around in their daily lives when there's an ICE sighting, any immigration enforcement activity, agents pulling over a car or showing up en masse to a house. Sometimes there's even a flashbang, and it's very dramatic.
Yeah.
They'll get people there to volunteers there to record it, to document the activity, and then in the case of this West Suburban group, they're confrontational. They'll make a loud protest, banging on drums, using bullhorns and so on to confront ICE officers.
Mm. So this group, the People's Patrol, it's led by a man named Cristobal Cavazos. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to play a little bit of what he had to say when he talked with you.
We want to go in and show the community, hey, we got your back. We're in the midst of a historic fight back right now against ICE. We're not going to leave any space to ICE. The People's Patrol is there to fill these spaces of terror and fear with solidarity and strength.
As we talked about a moment ago, sometimes these situations get very tense. So I wonder what the biggest challenges are for Cristobal and his group.
Well, he confided in me, and it took quite a bit of time sitting down with him, that one of his biggest challenges is actually within the immigrant community, because there's a lot of fear, you know, and that's part of the point of what's going on coming from the Trump administration is to spread fear, to get people to self-deport even. I saw that there are, you know, some pretty strong effects going on in the immigrant community. And a lot of that is focused on people like Cristobal Cavazos and this People's Patrol. And there's criticism of him. So he one of his challenges is just getting himself, building the courage in himself to go out and lead this. And you know, he does get a lot of people calling in and offering support. You know, his ranks of volunteers has mushroomed in recent months.
So he's seeing more, an increase, yeah. especially lately.
Yeah. yeah.
If you're just tuning in, welcome. This is In the Loop. I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons. And at the table, we've got WBEZ's Claire Lane and Chip Mitchell and John Seidel of the Sun-Times helping me break down the biggest stories that you should know today in the Chicago area. Back to you, Claire, because I want to talk about robots.
You
for
do?
Just a second. I just want to take a little break from immigration enforcement, just for a wee
they're
bit.
They're coming.
Delivery robots?
Yes, this is a deployment of another kind. We'll call it food delivery robots coming to Chicago today. Company Serve Robotics is joining the food delivery scene. There's a current one, Coco Robotics. Essentially, you could order food.
They
can bring
here
food
yet.
To you. Some of them are here.
I realize I'd seen them, but I've seen them in Florida. I've seen them in D.C.
Mostly these are pilot programs, and that could be why. But delivery bots were launched here last year. Serve Robotics is saying that they're going to deliver now to 14 different Chicago neighborhoods in their initial rollout. This includes Austin. This includes Humboldt Park as well as Lakeview, and that they're aiming to deploy 2,000 robots nationwide by the end of 2025.
I thought you were going to say 2,000 robots here in Chicago. That would have been a little
who knows.
A
they're
going to
keep
nuts.
On coming, so we'll keep watching it.
What do you guys think? Is this cool or is it potentially annoying, John?
Maybe a little bit of both. I guess it could be cool. I worry about that. Just finding more ways to replace people's jobs.
Yeah, that was my thought as well.
Yeah, but so
it is strange when you see them in action. Like I actually watched a full delivery of, you know, someone's ice cream in Fort Lauderdale, and it was like, what? This robot just pulls up and the lid flies open. You just pull your, you know, your item out and
and that's it. And then you pull behind a Starbucks and there's just a huge dumpster full of robots.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Right? Potentially.
Well, the baristas could fight back.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Are they subject to vandalism and people hitting them with their cars and so on?
They're not that big. They're almost just like little coolers with
that's
wheels.
Right.
So I think a human could, and a team of humans, strong baristas could take these things down if they have to.
Now I have the visual of that. Thank you, Claire. John, let's pivot back because... Sure. Again, you've been following this stuff, listening to lots of testimony. You've also been tracking what happens to people arrested for interactions with ICE. And so 4 hours of hearings yesterday. After all of that, what did you learn?
Yeah, I mean, 4 hours dealing with five people who are facing criminal charges for what happened Saturday outside of Broadview. We talked about that a little bit, right? And that was, you know, I think really the most we've seen out of these protests so far, and the most high profile among those, I believe it was, Ray Collins. There's been some discrepancy about his name. Ray Collins and I think Jocelyn Robledo were caught with loaded semi-automatic pistols outside of the Broadview facility over the weekend. And ICE and the Justice Department have made a big deal about this, especially given the shooting in Dallas last week. But let's be clear. First of all, they had lawful permits. They had FOIDs. They had concealed carry.
Okay.
And Collins' attorney explained to the court yesterday that this is just something he carries a gun for protection like people carry their keys. It's just wherever he goes, he's got his gun with him. He never brandished it or anything like that. But the magistrate judge, Gabriel Fuentes, ultimately decided to detain Collins, raising questions about his judgment in bringing a loaded firearm to a volatile situation like that. I know his attorney is going to continue to challenge the detention. But again, top Justice Department officials have made much of this couple.
Interesting. Any other stories you can share that maybe even had a different outcome, or was it pretty similar?
Yeah. I mean, so out of the five, prosecutors sought detention for, I believe, three, but only two were ultimately detained, I believe. A couple of them, yeah, the two that they didn't seek detention for, these were just kind of like tussles with ICE officers. You know, one person grabbed an officer's arm, another one swatted it away.
Oh, yeah.
They got arrested, they got held, they're going to get out. So situations like that.
Yeah. And Chip, I'm glad you're here today because in our news update yesterday, we were talking about you. We touched on your reporting from over the weekend. It was about Border Patrol arrests in downtown Chicago that happened over on Sunday, I believe. You're here now. So I just want to review, what did you see when you were downtown?
Well, we were, our photographer, sometimes photographer Ashley Resin, she beat me there by about 20 to 30 minutes. So she actually saw them parading around tourist sites near Millennium Park and witnessed arrests there, including a family with a very young child, a girl. It wasn't clear to her what they were basing, you know, what sort of probable cause they were basing these arrests, these decisions to pick these people out of crowded areas, tourist sites, and detain them. I made it there when there were these dozens of heavily armed, military style clad Border Patrol officers, helmets and so on, and fatigues and so on. I made it there when they were around the Chicago River, and then we followed them up Clark Avenue into River North. By that time, there were dozens of protesters that sort of glommed onto them, and they had been alerted to their presence, and they were chanting "ICE, go home" and so on. But I had a chance to just basically have a little chat with Gregory Bovino. He's the commander at large of the U.S. Border Patrol. He came to Chicago with his people, several dozen troops, about a week ago from Southern California, where he had been performing the same services for the Trump administration down there. So these guys are heavily armed with rifles. I got a chance to just approach him. I approached him. He's standing there, and he chatted with me. And I've got my phone right in his face. I identified myself very clearly, and I got a chance to ask him, you know, what was the criteria for picking out people to get into foot chases with, to chase them down and arrest them? And his answer was that he and his officers, for starters, were using their experience and intelligence.
Then, obviously, the particular characteristics of an individual, how they look. How do they look compared to, say, you? What's your name again?
Chip.
Chip. You or other folks, how do they appear in relation to what you or other people look like?
So there it was. You know, I was kind of stunned. You know, I'm a middle-aged, white, tall man. Mm-hmm. And I think he assumed I was like him and that I had attitudes and perspective of the world like him, and that I would sort of, you know, figure out a way to report that mm-hmm. in the most favorable manner possible.
Or even express agreement
right.
in the moment.
Right. And what it struck me as is that they're not even, they put somebody like Greg Bovino out in these highly public positions. They're not even trying to hide it. They are openly profiling based on ethnicity and other factors. And they got a Supreme Court decision in the context of California that allows profiling based on ethnicity. And there we go. There we had it.
Well, you know, John, as someone who covers federal courts, I'm curious your thoughts on what Bovino had to say to Chip.
Well, I mean, my mind went straight to what the Supreme Court did a few weeks ago, which is, you know, a lower court judge had blocked Bovino and his agents from stopping people based on these factors, like race or the language or even like using accents. And then the Supreme Court came in an entirely unexplained decision and blocked that lower court's order. We don't know why they did it. It could have been something as technical as legal standing, but I think it was taken by a lot of people as granting permission to people, to Bovino and to the agents, to go ahead and continue stopping people based on these factors. And I mean, Justice Brett Kavanaugh did on his own kind of endorse that method.
Yeah. Claire, while you're here, what else are you watching? What else is going on?
Well, we're going to get arty for just a minute. Several Chicago theaters did take home some pretty big prizes last night. This is at the Equity Jeff Awards. The Court Theater in Hyde Park won big, the most honors of the night. This was 9 awards for some of their plays, including one about a play in Berlin about the rise of fascism in Germany. The ceremony also honored some big birthdays. Goodman celebrating 100 years this fall. Also the 50th seasons for Oak Park Festival Theater and Steppenwolf. So theater still very much alive and very much well
yes.
here in Chicago, in case anyone forgot.
Very good to hear. Thank you, Claire. As we wrap, Chip and John, you know, we haven't seen a National Guard deployment yet. But the Trump administration has requested, as we mentioned at the top, their 100 troops be sent to defend ICE in our area. So both of you, real quick, I'm just curious what questions maybe are top of mind for you when you think of what that could mean for us, for Chicagoans. You want to go first, Chip?
Well, they're playing to a national audience. That's something we always have to keep in mind here. You know, here locally, even some conservative Chicago City Council members, some of the most conservative ones, are a little bit askance at looking at this deployment downtown yesterday. The downtown alderman Brandon Riley called it a photo op and called it un-American. But we have to keep in mind that they're playing to a national stage, and it'll be really interesting to see as they continue this show from city to city how it plays.
Yeah, John.
Well, I'm wondering, as they put on that national show, how much that's going to affect life for daily Chicagoans. I mean, 100 troops really isn't all that many compared to other deployments. And I'll be watching to see. I mean, we've talked a lot about some of these court cases and stuff, but I mean, it's been almost 5 months, I think, since Gavin Newsom sued in California over the deployment there. I believe there are still troops there, despite rulings in Newsom's favor. I mean, it's gone back and forth. So we'll see how effective the courts are, depending on what happens.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Sienna Greaves, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll join us for more. We drop a new episode about Chicago news and culture every weekday afternoon, including our weekly news recap on Fridays, and once a month, Ask the Mayor. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.